Backseat Book Club, Book 15, Sacre Bleu, by Christopher Moore.
Hey, this is Scott.
And this is Lena.
And I'm Sam. I come on here sometimes.
And we are the Backseat Producers, and this is Backseat Book Club.
And Sam, you can come by anytime you want.
Yeah.
And so can you.
Who, me?
I am pointing at the audience.
Yes, so can you. I actually
Please leave comments. We have a voicemail line and stuff. I know you're listening.
We're curious as to what books you want us to read.
And what do you think of the books we do read?
I guess. I mean, you picked from a Buick 8, Scott. I feel like I should slap you.
Oh, that's fine.
Excuse me while I walk over there.
Well, it didn't suck.
I couldn't get through it. I fell asleep.
You fall asleep at a lot of things.
It's not like it was Fight Club. Holy crap.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad I didn't reread that one with you guys.
Golly, I kind of wish I hadn't read it, period.
The sadness.
Sometimes torture is good for the soul.
It is.
I've decided.
Well, then there's books that Scott thinks are torture and you think are amazing, so those are also great moments.
Anything with that's just loaded with 1980s makes Lena happy.
And you do realize that man's putting out another book.
Ernest
Cline.
It's totally, exactly The Last Starfighter.
Oh, get out.
Yeah.
So, no. Lena, you and I are reading it.
And I've seen The Last Starfighter, so we'll be fine.
So, Lena and I are reading it.
There we go.
Scott, you can sit in a corner. It's okay. You can go sit in your corner with your pile of Matthew Stover that you try to force upon the world, and you'll be okay.
I will. It'll be great.
Ay, ay, ay.
It's kind of sad. He bought a Magic the Gathering book just because Matthew Stover wrote it. I feel like Scott's hit the lowest common denominator.
That's funny.
So what are we reading next month? What should the people be buying?
Apparently, was it Apocalypse Cow?
No, The Last Unicorn.
Oh, we like The Last Unicorn. Apocalypse Cow scares the crap out of me.
That might have to go in the second set, because we have our next three, at least.
So yes, The Last Unicorn. It's short, it's pretty, and it will make you cry.
Peter S. Beagle.
And Peter S. Beagle has magic powers, because he makes me cry every time he publishes a goddamn book.
Well, it's a unicorn. It's got to be magic, I would imagine.
That book will make you bawl, Lena. It will make you bawl. Like, you need to be ready for tear jerking.
Really? Okay. I'm trying to remember the last time a book made me cry. It happens.
It's one of those things. It happens, and then you go, oh, I have emotions. Shit.
I know.
It's so beautiful.
I mean, I know that there had to have been something in between, but I know The Color Purple made me cry.
Not the book, just that color.
Just The Color Purple. It is one of my favorite colors.
And speaking of colors, this month's book, which we'll be talking about tonight, is Sacre Bleu. Transition!
like a boss. That was a book.
It was crack.
Crack.
Which is funny, because if you read Christopher Moore's books, they're all crack. But this was a unique form of crack.
This was a special flavor of crack.
Oh, man. I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get into it. And then it finally... Like, the beginning... I totally enjoyed, and then it started to lose me for a while, and I thought, is there a plot? They're just going to keep it was like backstory, 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 backstory. oh wait, backstory. And then it took a while, and I'm like, oh, these things actually weave
they all mattered.
Okay, it took me a while to get there. And there was confusion, but I did understand it. And I did enjoy it. I give it that.
This is good and proper.
Yeah. Well, it's better than me saying I couldn't stand it and it made me sick.
Mm-hmm. Like Fight Club.
God, that was so... Oh, it was like pulling out my own fingernails.
Please Jeez. Don't hurt yourself.
It's the equivalent of pulling out my own fingernails.
No hurting yourself.
No, dear, never. Not if you say not to. I do everything you say.
Which is crazy. Don't do everything I say. But hug a bulldog. It'll make you feel better.
Well.
But yeah, Sacre Bleu. It is probably one of the more... If you've read Christopher Moore before, I would say it's probably one of his more atypical books.
Like, it's very offbeat for him. But he hits basically sort of this French comedy feel to it. Like, it has that... Like, that there is a certain Amélie-esque quality to the goings-on.
Hmm.
Plus, there's a guy named the Color Man.
I don't like him.
Well,
he was my favorite, actually.
I didn't like him at all.
Well, before we get too deep into that, a quick plot summary is that it's set in 1890 in Paris as fictional baker Lucien Lessard and actual count and painter Henri Toulouse-Lautrec start poking around the circumstances of Vincent van Gogh's apparent suicide and kind of coming across a minor conspiracy and supernatural manipulation of the European art scene for centuries by a strange little shaman and a supernatural muse type being as they keep themselves powered, and it all kind of that there's a mystery and some diversions for, you know, just drunken good fun times, and it eventually and then it all ends very happily for everyone.
Funny enough.
Yeah. Funnily enough.
Yeah.
Except for Van Gogh, who's still, you know, dead.
Although, I wasn't really thrilled with how it ended, what happened at the end. I was slightly disappointed. Not in the story itself, but in what the character, like, what happened.
Well, it's kind of because the ending has a bit of, like, the pink bow syndrome. Like, it's...
What's
everything
gets
wrapped up really, really nicely. And you're just kind of like, okay. Mm. And I truthfully felt the ending was wrapped up a bit too perfectly for my tastes.
Well, not so much that it was wrapped up, but the way it was wrapped up.
Where it's just very casual murder of a lot of guys.
Pretty much.
And the fact that, you know, the book ends with another color man, and I did not like that.
So what is like that at all? The color man? I mean, he likes penises, we know that. And he likes the color blue.
Bleh.
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 And, you know, I don't... And I the chapter towards the end, the chapter about the color man's birth and just, I totally lost me. I didn't understand that at all. Didn't really care that I didn't understand it, though, but...
All you need to know is the color man is creepily like the candy man, and that's pretty much all you need to know. I mean, he's just a giant creeper.
No, like, he's a tiny creeper.
Yes, it's true. He's actually a tiny he's but he's a creeper. Like that's all it really is. And I mean, he reminded me for me when I was reading it. He just reminded me of all the, like, those horror films with the slow moving guy with the slow talking voice. And that's how I read him. So, you know, it was funny. Like, I was picturing, like, Freddy or Jason, where it's just, like, the whole, like, dun-dun-dun, the color man's here, like, you should run away. I don't know why I read him that way, but that was, like, the impression I got. And there's me going, like, oh, God, he's here. It's the color man. And Scott be like, why is that a big deal? I'm like, he's scary. And he is scary.
I found, well, like, yeah, yes, he's scary. I was more annoyed by him. I guess because I was annoyed by him, I don't.
What's so annoying about the color man? He just wants people to paint so he can live forever.
Oh yeah.
Painting is immortality.
But it's his immortality.
Exactly. So it means more penis jokes. And inappropriate behavior.
Yes.
Like, that's part of the problem. He's creepy because he's just, everything that comes out of his mouth is so inappropriate. You're just kind of like, oh god, what do I do with this character? I love him? Do I hate him? Do I just,
you know, I felt for him a little the second he met the professor, and it's like, your first name is The?
Oh my goodness,
like,
yes.
this is a comedic novel, we should mention. So, you know, there's a lot of wordplay and just some great laconic bits, and just a lot of fun to be had.
Go ahead.
Go for it, Lena.
And I was going to say my favorite character was Toulouse-Lautrec. I just adored him.
You know what upsets me about Toulouse-Lautrec?
That I like him and I didn't like the Color Man.
No, there's just one little bit of trivia that would have fit in so well with this story that I happen to know about him. Do you know what the girls at La Moulin Rouge called him?
No.
Teapot.
Teapot?
Because he's short and stout and has a spout.
The Trek was so cute. Like, he was adorable in the story.
I liked his character.
He was just, you know, I liked him, and I actually quite liked Lucienne just as much. I thought they were just such a really fun pair of characters to follow around when it was about them.
I liked Lucienne until the end!
Oh no, I hated Lucienne at the end of the book too. It was kind of like, douchebag.
After everything that happened, he did what he did, and I'm like, what? That's why I didn't like the end. Because after all the shit he went through, he's like, alright, fine, let's do this.
But you know what? It's kind of unexpected. Because of how the novel's built, it's one of those endings where I agree with you. It's not very good, but it makes perfect sense.
How does it make sense? It doesn't make sense to me. The fact that he would take that route.
But you know what? I think it has to do with his suffering. At that point, when you've suffered enough, you know,
that stupid girl.
I'm sorry, girls are stupid sometimes. When they make you suffer. Sometimes you go that road that you didn't necessarily want to.
Ah, this is true.
And that's why, I don't know about you, it made sense to me. And like, you know, I felt bad for him. I felt for him. I didn't agree with what he did, but I did feel for him. I don't know. Like, I had a lot of sympathy for Lucienne. Quite a bit. I think more than, I don't know if Christopher Moore was intending to make the reader feel.
I liked him just until the switch at the end. I'm like, what? Really? Okay.
It was a Boo Earns moment.
It was a what?
A Boo Earns. You've never heard that from The Simpsons? Mm-hmm. I said Boo Earns.
Oh.
Which is the same as just saying Boo.
Yeah.
I was saying Boo Earns.
I liked, I actually read the entire book on my phone. That's which I've crazy. Gotten it. Well, you know what? Since I moved into this apartment in April, I don't have fantastic internet, which means my Nook doesn't work that often because I don't have, I can't get a connection always. And I'm just not in the mood to go traipse and bring that stupid thing somewhere else. So I will either read it on my computer or I'll read it on my phone. But I do have a bigger phone, so I like my phone. My phone's pretty.
So what did everybody think about the actual artist part of the novel? I mean, this book actually gives you a surprisingly well-rounded history of painters.
Well,
I
it's post-impressionist fanfic.
It really is. It's funny because, like, I'll be honest, I had trouble at first with this book in the sense that I was like, oh god, there's gonna be a lot of, like, Frenchies, and they're, oh my god, paintings, and oh my god, we're so stuck up.
Well, you have to remember, at the time, those guys were the rejects.
Oh, I know. And I don't know what it was. Like, I was expecting to be like, I hate these characters because I hate French Impressionist paintings.
I liked how different paintings were woven into the story. I loved that. Yes. And there were even, because reading it on my phone, which wouldn't have been as good on my Nook because the Nook is black and white. You know, they show you when a famous picture is woven into the story, you see that in the book.
I love that. I kind of wish the paperback version had the color sleeves. I think that would have been really interesting.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe they'll repackage this one the way they did Lamb's Got, with pretty artwork.
Yeah.
But I like the way that the paintings were woven in, and I loved the text at the bottom. Because on one hand, it gives you sort of a hint about the painting itself, and on the other hand, it's still related to the novel.
Mm-hmm.
You never felt like it was just, here's a blurb about what this painting is and when it was done. And it's like, no, he was still trying to make it very fun. So it's like you get an art history lesson, but it's entertaining.
Well, he captions the paintings with an amusing line from usually somewhere in the vicinity of that.
Yes.
So, you know, you'll see a reclining nude and then a snarky comment from the model about having to pose, to hold that pose.
I'm sorry, I feel bad for models in paintings, okay? Do you see how they have to pose sometimes?
For hours.
Clearly they need Jim C. Hines to help them with their posing. Just saying. Hello, I would take posing lessons from Jim C. Hines. Willingly.
So the last real character in this is, of course, Blue.
Blah. Did they ever... I'm trying to remember. Do they ever actually get into who she really is?
Yes, she's a magic space alien. Rock.
Thing.
Yeah, that's true. Amuse.
I mean... Yeah, like she... Like the color... The big reveal is that the color man was a prehistoric shaman who, you know, slept next to a meteorite and was somehow able to conjure forth a hot chick from the minerals in the meteorite.
Remember, they were rare minerals because they had that whole shtick about the Virgin Mary and how her outfit could only be a certain type of blue.
That really is not related, actually.
It's not. I thought it was.
Like, they nod. The thing is that they need a... The whole thing is to keep going. They need people to invest creative energy into paint made with lapis lazuli, which is obscenely expensive to use for paint. But it's the only way you can actually get blue that lasts more than a few years, because organic pigments break down and turn black. So the whole point is that you see in these interludes that throughout history, they're nudging certain people to use more blue. So they nudged the 5th century Byzantines to use blue for the Virgin Mary's cloak, which carried over to the Catholic Church, who then produced a whole lot of images of the Virgin Mary in blue by church edict. They couldn't do red, as had been the tradition prior.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a couple of chapters where it's the color man and blah teamed up with Picts, because they've got 10,000 guys painted blue. It's awesome! And they felt bad for the Romans that, you know, had to die for them to keep going.
I don't know what to say.
What did you think of the style? The writing style.
Once I got a little more into it, I really enjoyed it. But it was... Choppy is not the right word. You know, as I said before, there was a lot of, like... You get all the different backstories of all the different artists and just, like, tiny, tiny bits of backstory of Color Man. And it took me... And it kind of, like, depended. Certain artists, I enjoyed their story more. And I don't know if it's just because... I don't know.
That might be the facts, just sort of making the story... Getting in the way of a good story.
Could be.
And it does have sort of a... very relaxed pace in the middle. Like, the structure is a thriller, but it just sort of takes a moment to relax and enjoy the backstory and have fun, amusing conversations between Lucien and Lautrec.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, I did enjoy it. And I still can't think, like, it wasn't slow, it wasn't meandering, but there were times I found it a little meandering.
Just relaxed.
I found actually when he was getting a little too factual, it actually got dense at times. But that, I mean, that's my opinion.
As far as the artists?
Yeah. I just found some of the parts, I'm like, okay, yes, I know. This is some fact. Let's get back to the silly. It was a lot of my problem. And, I mean, you know what? Thinking back, I mean, I looked at the afterword that comes in the book along with the bibliography. So it's like he's citing a lot of things in order to, I mean, make sure that it's more realized. But it was just like, just a little too much fact for me. Like, just give me a sense of who these people are supposed to be, because I hate French Impressionism.
Post-Impressionism.
Whatever the fuck it is. And
fight.
And let me move on, right?
Art fight.
I mean, I will giggle, because there was that reference to Picasso and how he was going into his blue period, because that's actually my favorite Picasso period. So I giggled like a little schoolgirl during that bit. I was like, because clearly this man from Spain needs to use more blue. And there's me going, his blue period. Like, only I get humor out of, like, stupid nonsense like that. But I felt proud of myself that I knew what he was talking about there, because I really know nothing about art.
I got the
art.
Joke this time!
I'm sorry, but truthfully, I mean, I know zip about art. I really do. I just look at art and go, it's pretty or it's not pretty. It's a blob or it's not a blob. I mean, I went to the MoMA once and basically was like, there's too much Argyle in this museum. I don't get it. And then being like, can I go back outside? Because the Argyle is just blinding my eyes. And then my teacher going, no, you got to suffer the Museum of Modern Art. And I was like, fine. Like, I just, you know, I wish I could appreciate art the way that people do, but I can't. But I will give more credit. He made art interesting, to say the least. And I did find myself actually having fun with the story, despite it being on a topic I generally don't have interest in.
I was a little bit of the opposite. I liked hearing about the artists, and I think that's... And there are, you know, there are certain artists that I prefer their art over others, but unfortunately, they were only touched on. Like, there was, one paragraph on Kandinsky?
Yeah.
Little tiny bit on Seurat, little tiny bit on Monet, and I'm like, oh, okay, then.
Could have enjoyed a little more on that.
Like, they're the ones I like. Not that I dislike Van Gogh. Actually, I listened to the correct pronunciation of his name. I'm like, yeah.
No one actually cares.
No, it's like Van Gogh. There's not even a vague G. It's all a H.
Like, you know what? Screw the Dutch.
So it's a hub, but like a vomit sound, or
yeah, it's Grandpa clearing his throat. It's like Van Gogh, or the beginning of a hairball.
I really feel sorry for him. I mean, his name would be enough to make anyone commit suicide.
There are people who live in that town.
I'm sorry, I know. I just know. You know what? Let's just say Van Gogh, because it's what everybody says, and I think.
I might have been a little more interested in him only because of that one Doctor Who episode with Van Gogh, which I loved that episode. So it just kept reminding me of that. But, I mean, Toulouse-Lautrec, I don't dislike his art. I don't believe it's ever grabbed me. Like, I'm more than happy to stop and look at it, but there are other paintings that, you know...
So there's better artsy-fartsy.
For me. I mean, there's, you know, and I know it's probably what a lot of people say, but I absolutely do love Monet. I love the way it looks. It is, in fact, as they all say, to me, it's dreamy. And I will stand there and look at his paintings for hours and be very happy to do so.
They are very pretty.
They are pretty. I like Seurat. I like the... You know, obviously you get close to it, you get far away, you get close to it, you get far away. It's my own tiny little acid trip.
You do that thing from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yes! I enjoy art, don't you know? I don't know if there's, I mean, I don't really have a style that I like over any other, but you know, I can go to an art museum, spend all there, and be moved time and time again. And some things I'd be like, eh, that's pretty. And some things I'll just stand there and almost have tears in my eyes. I'm gay that way, you know.
Yep.
And that's okay.
So, this my copy of the book, also is much like The Gunseller, a book club edition. So here comes my favorite segment, where we read the questions from the back of the book and either answer them or mock them.
Alrighty then.
So first question is, do you think that Van Gogh was simply insane and that was why he committed suicide, or was there more to the story, as Sacrebleu suggests?
I don't know if, from what little I know, I don't actually know if he was insane or if he was bipolar or clinically depressed. Clearly there was something going on in his noggin.
You don't cut your ear off for no reason.
Yeah. But
at the same time, what suicide shoots themselves in the chest and drags themselves a mile back to a doctor?
Yeah, that is kind of
odd. And there has been some nosing around through history that maybe he was, fairly recently, since the book has been written, that maybe he was actually murdered by a rival...
A rival artist, or a rival...
I think a rival artist's.
Hmm. Or the Color Man.
Or it could have been the Color Man.
I mean, I totally, even though I'm not hugely artistic, but I totally get the tortured artist thing. I think when you have that level of talent, it really doesn't take much for it to rip your soul apart and rip your being apart. When you have that level of talent to either create what you need to create and you can't, you know, to be able to achieve the level that you can't quite get to. I could see that making any true artist a Looney Tune. That's it. I answered a question.
It's a dumb question.
Okay. There we go. One, two answers in one mockery.
It's okay.
Okay. Question two. In the beginning of Sacrebleu, it says that many people in Paris were beginning to argue that painting was just color, nothing more. What does this mean, and do you think it was the case in 1890? Is that the case now?
Also a dumb question.
Yeah, I have no answer for that.
Well, I guess I'll say, in the context of 1890, painting is just color, in the sense, as in, we have photography now, why would we bother with painters? And
it kind of was true, I believe, back then, that, you know, painters weren't, they weren't lauded as much.
Are they really lauded now?
That's true. Well, yeah, the ones who've been dead for 200 years.
Yeah, the dead ones, sure.
Exactly.
But that was always the case. You think, you know, in 1490, everyone was like, hey, Leonardo, you're a great guy. Keep up the awesome stuff. Or it's like, what is with all this crap all over your house, Leonardo?
Yeah. Okay, dumb question.
Dumb question. Question three. The artists in Sacrebleu, especially Toulouse-Lautrec, indulge in drugs, alcohol, and prostitutes. Is there something about their artistic natures that makes them more susceptible to these vices, or is it simply human nature? How do these vices empower Juliet and the Color Man? Reading comprehension question here.
I do think that at work.
I think in the case of the artists, it's their human nature. They don't... I mean, look at... In comparison, look at Lucien. He was a baker for his day job. He didn't have... His life being what it was, he couldn't be like Toulouse-Lautrec. He couldn't take opium. He couldn't go hang out with the whores all day. Because he was like a part-time artist. But I think it was their human nature.
I think once you give people enough free time, they'll find a way to spend it.
Yeah. I'd probably hang out with the hookers all day if I didn't have to work. I don't know, maybe. Who knows? I could rephrase that a little bit better.
Oh, there's a fine clip. I'm sending that one to your mom. Okay, question four. Mère Lessard tells Lucien that women are wondrous, mysterious, and magical creatures who only get treated not only with respect, but reverence and awe. These artists especially see these qualities in their muses, What similar qualities do these women possess that the artists find particularly inspiring? Is it simply that these women are beautiful, or is there something more? What makes you think a person or place inspiring? What inspires you? It's like five hell? Questions. That's
oh my
cheating.
God!
That is cheating, Penguin Publishing. This isn't even Penguin. HarperCollins, you're cheating me.
Well, I mean, they found inspiration in different things. Was it not Renoir who liked big butts and he could not lie?
That is true.
Whereas, you know, other ones like, she's a little skinny for me. For some, it was skin color. Like, they really preferred the pale women. And Gauguin liked the islandy girls. I can't believe I'm remembering this shit. I normally have zero recollection when we record these shows. Book good, book bad. What inspires
what you,
me? The hell? I don't know.
What about you, Sam? Do you have any answers for the 17 questions they snuck into one paragraph?
Dear HarperCollins, stop with 17 questions into one paragraph. It's not acceptable. But continue working on Team Epic Reads because they're friggin' amazing. No, Team Epic Reads is adorable. They're two girls who talk about teen books on Wednesdays. And it's amazing.
Tea.
And they drink tea, and it's called the Tea Time.
Oh, that's cute.
Oh, they are so cute. Best thing HarperCollins ever created. That's because HarperCollins is a special publisher.
Uh-huh.
Remember, everybody, Divergent outsells Hunger Games 4-1.
Five.
Sorry, 5-1 now. You said 4-1 the other day.
No, I've said 5-1 the whole time.
Bullshit.
Whatever the opposite of bullshit is. Okay, question 5, which is actually two questions, HarperCollins. At what point did you realize the Color Man was more than the crass little man he appears to be, and do you ever feel sorry for him?
Penis. It's the only answer I can come up with, because it's the only answer that matters, and it's the only thing he really says.
Well, by nature of the Color Man, when he kind of first shows up, you know there's something a little off about him.
Yeah, he has a blue dong.
Well, you don't know that at the beginning.
This is true.
That's just a glorious reveal later on.
Oh, I spoiled it.
You ruined the whole book, Sam. There
Damn
you go,
it.
People.
I'm gonna
you don't have to read it
now.
At all.
Table flip.
Don't read it at all.
What was the other question?
Do you ever feel
bad for him?
Yeah.
Fuck no.
I also agree with the fuck no.
No.
And I liked him as a character. I don't feel sorry for him.
I was like pissed off that it took forever to kill him. I shot him 5 times. Oh, boop, 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 boop. But bullets fall out. I'm fine. Find some clothes. God damn you.
It's the cockroach that doesn't die.
Ew.
I'm sorry. It's suitable. He's gross.
He's true. That's true. He is a cockroach.
Do we have to keep doing these HarperCollins questions, Scott? They're awful.
Yeah, they are awful, but there's only a couple more.
No.
By which I mean 20, because they can't do...
There's only 3 more, but he means 20.
Yeah.
No more, Scott.
Okay, I'll see if there's one that's actually good in here.
No, because I do this at work all day. You can't do these comprehension questions with me.
Okay. No, there's one that actually is worth answering because I meant to bring it up.
Okay.
This is more for Sam, but
no.
Which means it's over my head.
No, it's not that. It's how do you feel it compares to Christopher Moore's other novels?
Oh, okay.
It's not Lamb.
Well, nothing is Lamb.
And it's not Bloodsucking Fiends.
Although it has a lot more in common with Bloodsucking Fiends.
It really does, actually, now that
with
I think
this weird
about it.
Supernatural codependent relationship business.
I mean, right?
But they somehow managed to... There's a lot, I think, of Biff in Lautrec.
I mean, writing style-wise, I think this book is incredibly different. I mean, usually when you pick up a Christopher Moore book, you know what the style's going to be. You know it's going to be crack cocaine because... Everything in his novels are just ridiculous. I mean, The Stupidest Angel is about an angel who murders people. And he's
no,
really
he cute. Starts a zombie apocalypse.
Sorry, he starts the zombie apocalypse. He wants to murder people with the zombies, and he's really cute.
No, he doesn't want to murder anyone. He just thought he was helping. Like Spider-Man.
Oh, right. He did think he was Spider-Man.
He wanted to be Spider-Man.
Which is the one about the mass murdering? Was that the Island of the Sequin Love Nuns?
Yeah, that was Island of the Sequin Love Nun.
I didn't like that one.
Sequined Love Nun?
Yes.
Yes.
If only I was going to a Halloween party this week.
Like his books are pretty entertaining, and for the most part, at least you always know you're going to get some element of fun in the book. Mm-hmm. This one here, I think because he was actually working with, you know, other sources, I mean, it does come across very different. And not different bad, I think. I actually quite liked the writing style in this book. Mm-hmm. I actually appreciated that it was much different from some of the other books because, unfortunately, one thing that Christopher Moore suffers from is that many of his characters have the same voice. A lot of the voices are very samey. So it was kind of nice to read this book and the characters don't feel that way. It's like my biggest beef with John Green. Every character John Green writes has the same freaking voice. And it's like, John Green, we get it. You're good at this one voice. Create a new one.
And related to this question was the reason why we did Sacre Bleu was because Becca actually suggested Coyote Blue, which is a different Christopher Moore novel. And I was like, I have read Coyote Blue, and if we discuss that, the whole episode is going to be me saying, this book is not as good as Green Grass Running Water, which has similar themes and also characters.
It has similar themes, similar characters, and is done a million times better. I actually absolutely hate Coyote Blue because I compare it to Green Grass Running Water.
Yeah, so this would have been me and Sam hating on Christopher Moore, and that would have made us all unhappy.
Because we like Christopher Moore.
So I was like, we own Sacre Bleu, we haven't read it yet, let's do that.
Well, it was either that or we have Fluke, too, which is one I know has a lot of mixed opinions as well, which is about a one-winged whale.
Oh.
Which totally takes a little bit from Free Willy is the joke.
Okay. So I've never seen Free Willy, so, yeah.
It's okay, Free Willy will make you cry.
Oh.
It's a sad children's movie about a killer whale.
I know the story pretty much, but yeah.
It's sad.
Okay.
So I don't like sad animal things.
I don't either, so this is part of the problem.
I made the mistake of watching that stupid Marley and Me. God damn it.
Oh god, I don't even talk about Marley and Me. There's Labradors in that. It's made of Labrador. I have a Labrador.
It's made of Labrador.
It's pretty bad. I remember watching that movie and just bawling with my mom because we're just like, ah, Labradors.
Okay, so back to Sacre Bleu. I feel I'll just point this out. Yes, it is a sort of a triple entendre title because we have the color, the girl, and, that phrase everyone thinks French people say.
Yeah.
I'll just mention that.
Wasn't it actually used a few times in the book?
Yes.
Yeah. But that's because it's sort of appropriate for the time period.
Yeah.
Like, it's a bit like how no one actually says zounds.
Challenge accepted.
You're going to start saying zounds.
I could.
Okay.
Why not?
I don't know.
People would not be surprised for me to start uttering these words.
How about you just start saying, by the hammer of Thor!
Yeah, well, I'm also trying to weave in for the greater good. Whenever someone questions something I do that they think is stupid, it's for the greater good. I can weave in by the hammer of Thor. That's not an issue. It's not a problem at all.
All right, so everyone's favorite question of the episode, who is this book for?
Sam, clearly.
I don't know.
No, I mean, the book, clearly, it's for you.
Probably.
With your love of post-impressionistic
smack. Some days I wonder what books are for me for realsies. Scott sometimes says this book is totally for you, and then I look at him funny because he lies.
Yes, I lie so you won't read so much YA steampunk.
I haven't read very much YA steampunk this year. You knocked that off.
I know, because you ran out of it.
I did run out of it. Excuse me while I go be sad for a minute.
I don't know. Someone who would be interested by the art side of it? I have no idea.
See, it's even, but it's still interesting even if you don't care about art.
It is.
Well, I remember what Pat Rothfuss said.
That if Christopher Moore punched him in the balls, he'd still buy his next book.
Yes. It's true.
That's yeah.
Like he was very open about that.
Well, there was a whole longer analogy about some authors. It's like, if he, wrecked my car, I might not buy it in hardcover. But I still like him. But it's like, no, if Christopher Moore walked up and kicked me in the junk, I would still buy his next book.
Okay, then.
And apparently, if you buy the book in hardcover, if you're a person who buys physical books, you will get color pictures as opposed to
Oh?
us with the paperback.
Damn it.
But no, I would recommend this to anyone who's looking for a good laugh, who likes the idea of French literature without, actually having to deal with French literature.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's still not as good as Lamb.
Well, yes. But now that you've been introduced to Christopher Moore, you should go read Lamb, The Gospel of Christ According to Biff.
Biff?
Biff.
Yes, his childhood best friend.
Okay.
But no, really. I mean, Christopher Moore is fun, and he's one of those authors that, I mean, if you're really looking for something silly or you've had a bad day, you read him because he cheers you up. He makes you smile. He makes life so ridiculous that you just kind of go, okay, I can handle this.
This book has a running joke about a guy being hit on the head with a baguette for his entire life.
Poor
Every
soul. Yep.
day.
That well, to test the perfectness of the baguette.
You gotta make it right. That's how you know it's right.
Because it bends, but it doesn't break. That is the perfect elasticity of the baguette. And still crispy because he ends up with crumbs in his ears.
Poor soul. I don't think I would want to be that person.
Well, who's gonna buy that loaf? You end up ruining a loaf every day. But I just like the fact that they're constantly drinking coffee and eating bread with cheese and bread with butter, that made me happy. I'm like, ah, oh, I want bread.
See, I have a weird resonance with this because I had fairly recently just played an extended Trail of Cthulhu campaign in which we played surrealist painters who were wandering around H.P. Lovecraft's dreamlands wreaking havoc, and then we caused World War II. It is a much longer story, but it's like, if you just jump this book ahead 3 decades, that was somewhat something of our experience.
There you go.
Okay, so final thoughts.
it's not my favorite Christopher Moore book, but it is acceptable.
It is the only Christopher Moore book I've read,
and that's a shame.
But would you read more?
Well, considering she keeps pushing Lamb and it does sound interesting, I would read another one to get more of a grasp of his writing style.
Honestly, just
And
read
also,
Lamb.
well, yeah, that, and that's the thing. I probably will read Lamb.
Well, no. Also, do like Bite Me.
He's got really fun books. I mean, like I said, he's good for funk breaking. He's a funk breaking author, so when you
I
feel
mean,
like you're in a slump, read Christopher Moore. He'll make you smile.
yeah. I mean, it definitely. There was comedy in the book, but it wasn't throw it in your face comedy, which I appreciated. Yeah, I would read another of his books, absolutely.
And scat.
Okay, well, I guess I would say that, I enjoyed it a great deal. It was fun, and I would say, yeah, go out and get this one.
So, for the most part, we have tentative thumbs up, and thumbs up.
Indeed.
All right, thumbs up all around. And
Yay.
if you disagree with us, let us know by calling our voicemail line, 618-207-4794.
And
Or you
our.
can visit the website and push a button, and it will call you, saving you some long distance monies.
Or threaten Scott on Twitter.
That's always fun.
Later, and I like that method.
Did you say that they could leave comments on the website as well?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And our next book will be The Last Unicorn by Peter S. Beagle, which apparently is going to make me cry.
Damn straight.
Okay. I'm now expecting to cry. It better deliver on its promise.
So, good
All right
night.
then. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Good night.
Backseat Book Club is a Backseat production. Visit backseatproducers.com for more shows. Join the discussion and make suggestions for books on goodreads.com. Music by Kevin MacLeod.